Hello and welcome to The Sound of Economics. Today we're here for a special edition of the Backstage series from the annual meetings of Bruegel, the Brussels-based economic think tank. I'm Nicholas Barrett, speaking with Zsolt Darvas, a special fellow at Bruegel, right after the panel on priorities for Europe's monetary union, with Lawrence Boone, chief economist at the OECD, Victor Constancio, former vice president of the ECB, Professor Ashoka Modi from Princeton University, and Thomas Wieser from Bruegel. Zsolt, what do you think were the most important or memorable ideas discussed on the panel today?
We had a really fascinating discussion with the four panelists because they shared some basic ideas about the structure and the creation of the euro area, but their views were very much different on how to assess the current state of the euro area, and there were even more different views on what would be the needed reforms in the years to come. Now, let me start with what is shared. There was a shared view that the euro is a very special creation because there is one currency for 19 sovereign countries, and these 19 sovereign countries kept most of their sovereignty in terms of economic policy. They have only delegated to the European Central Bank the management of monetary policy, and they gave up their own currencies, so there is a single euro, which is a single external exchange rate. But beyond monetary policy, member states of the euro area, they retain their sovereignty. And there is a big difficulty on how a centralized central bank can manage such a diverse monetary area. If you look at the United States, the situation is very clear. There is one Federal Reserve, one central bank, and there is one Treasury, the U.S. Treasury. So basically, the monetary authority has a single fiscal partner, and of course there is one, parliament in the U.S. which have all the authority to make any kind of laws and decisions. So basically, if any economic policy decision has been made at the political level, they make it into practice by enacting the laws, and the central bank and treasury can cooperate in terms of economic policies and monetary policy actions. But in the Eurozone, when it was created, and it's still today, it is completely different. In the United States, it took 200 years, so two centuries, to reach the current situation whereby there is a well-functioning monetary union. While in the Eurozone, we have just, celebrated the 20th anniversary of the euro, and this very unique structure of the euro area remains. Another shared consensus among the panelists was that the initial focus of the euro area was too narrow because there was a belief that price stability will be maintained by the European Central Bank, fiscal discipline will be ensured by the Stability and Growth Pact, which requires to have budget deficit below 3% of GDP and public debt below 60% of GDP, plus a couple of other complicated rules. But this is the basic. So the main idea was that there is a price stability and fiscal stability, and if we have those two, then euro area member states will perform well within the euro area. And we had to learn during the first decade of the euro that this was not the case. There were major financial vulnerabilities building up. For example, in some countries, very large financial inflows caused huge credit and housing booms. Also, after countries entered the euro area, fiscal discipline weakened in a number of countries, so that was also not a permanent solution to enforce fiscal discipline. In the financial sector, major vulnerabilities built up. And at the same time, also in the current accounts or trade balances deteriorated or diverged substantially, whereby basically Germany and some other countries accumulated larger and larger surpluses, trade and current account surpluses, while southern European countries accumulated larger and larger trade and current account deficits. And these deficits were financed from capital inflows, mainly from borrowing abroad. So basically one part of the euro area became the creditor of the other part of the euro area, and that created vulnerabilities because large debt creates vulnerability. So some of these were the common elements, but as I just said, the conclusions on how to move forward and what to conclude from this were very, very different across the different panelists.
And what's at stake here? What happens if we get this wrong in the years to come? What happens if we get this right?
Views were very much different on that. So some panelists had the view that given this fundamental problem of the euro area, which lacks sharing of sovereignty in a number of areas, is basically doomed to lead to a very suboptimal development that might or might not lead to a crisis or the breakup of the euro area. That's difficult to predict. But the fact that countries are not willing to share their sovereignty, for example, creating a federal fiscal authority or something like that, would likely mean that the weaker countries continues to become even weaker, and the stronger countries continues to become even stronger. And the example of basically that, if we can look at, for example, as a weak country like Italy, which has continuously deteriorated during euro area membership and even before, and currently the country has a number of problems, weak competitiveness, large problems still in the banking sector, a much larger interest rate that both the government and private borrowers will have to pay. And under stronger countries, typically Germany is mentioned, which has a huge current account surplus, very low unemployment rate, a much healthier trade performance, and so on. But other panelists have disagreed with this view, and they argued, for example, that Germany was the so-called weakest link of the euro after 1990, when it joined the euro area. And for Germany, it took a decade to become more competitive. And the reason for that is that Germany enacted good economic reforms, which helped to improve the country's competitiveness. And after a decade of very low growth, indeed Germany had one of the lowest growth rate from 1990 to 2007, after that Germany started to improve. So Germany was not always the strongest country in Europe. And if you look at Italy, Italy's problem started well before the euro was introduced. Even the 1980s and 1990s, Italy had a relatively weak growth and productivity performance. So some other panelists argue that it's not the euro which essentially reinforces the weaknesses, but it's almost entirely domestic political and policy decisions, economic policy decisions, which determine whether a country performs successfully in the euro area or not. So again, on the diagnosis of what's to come, if the current situation will continue without any new reform, we're very much different across the different panelists.
And in terms of policy recommendations, what kind of ideas did you hear during the panel?
Again, policy recommendations were completely opposite. So on one extreme, I could say, one of the panelists argued that fiscal rules, for example, should be abolished completely. Because, and the argument behind that is that in Europe, fiscal rules, European-wide fiscal rules, are always politicized. Even if there's a threat of sanctions, sanctions will never apply, because if one day a country votes for a sanction against another country, the finance minister might think, okay, but what happens if 3 years from now they vote against me and sanction me? So there is a tendency among finance ministers not to sanction each other. So one view is that fiscal rules will never work, and a bad fiscal rule is much worse than no fiscal rule at all. I think one shared agreement was that the current fiscal rules are not optimal and they have a number of deficiencies. And one view was that if they are not good enough, then let's get rid of them completely. That would basically free up the Commission from making judgments on member states, which are very frequently seen as political judgments. But there are also some other views, more nuanced views on the fiscal rules, by acknowledging that indeed fiscal rules have problems. And fiscal rules are not respected fully, but still fiscal rules had impact. For example, even in the most recent case for Italy, whereby Italy had an agreement with the European Commission for not proposing an excessive deficit procedure earlier this year, even Italy made some efforts to reduce the budget deficit. And also in the past years, even if Italy and other countries have not fully complied with the fiscal rules, but they made some efforts. So this other view suggests that, okay, the rules are not perfect. They have a number of deficiencies which are very well known. But at least they had some impact. And given the status quo that we have the euro, it's not possible to leave, or leaving the euro area would be a real disaster, not just for the country leaving, but for all others. So we have to stay together. We have to think about how to improve the current functioning of the euro area. And I mean, and this argument says that yes, we should keep the fiscal rules, but make them much better, simpler, easier to implement, less prone to the problems which were identified. For example, the fiscal rules, again, there was a general agreement on that, amplify cyclical movements, because in good times, member states believe that, oh, we have a lot of tax revenues, let's spend them. So in good times, fiscal rules don't discipline countries as much as it should be. While in bad times, if they enter a recession with a large public debt, then they don't have the fiscal space to have the economy with the fiscal stimulus, but instead they have to do a fiscal consolidation, which again will be pro-cyclical, because in a recession, if you do a fiscal consolidation, that just makes the recession even deeper. So there was an agreement that fiscal rules have this so-called pro-cyclical implication. But one view was that we should completely get rid of them. The other view was that we should try to make and work them better. A number of other different aspects. There was also an agreement that since the Eurozone is not complete, there is no proper management of the fiscal policy throughout the economic cycle. I like in the US, where there is one US Treasury and one Congress which make decisions. In the euro area, we have 19 treasuries, 19 national parliaments, various constitutional rules and requirements, and a rather complicated procedure for fiscal policy coordination. But that probably doesn't lead too much, because coordination will work only if all member states have the very same interest. Whenever member states have different interests, then policy coordination will not work. So based on this reason, some panelists argued that there should be a Eurozone level of fiscal stabilization instrument, whereby in an economic downturn, there should be a mechanism which can help mobilize European resources to help to end the recession faster and help unemployment to fall faster. Another interesting discussion, in which there was also rather different views, whether the Eurozone need a so-called safe asset. Under safe asset, economists typically mean an asset which is guaranteed by a very creditworthy government, and markets agree that government indeed will pay back the debt whatever happens. And in the Eurozone, we have some safe assets. For example, the German government bonds are rather safe, and it's rather credible that the German government will pay back whatever it happens. But still, the outstanding amount of German government bonds is much, much less than the outstanding amount of U.S. treasuries. And also the turnover on the financial markets, so the daily trading with the German bonds, is much, much lower than that with the U.S. treasuries, which means that basically the German bonds are not at the same level as the U.S. treasury. So there is an idea of creating a Eurozone safe asset, which would somehow pool member states' resources or assets together under a guarantee. And again, there are rather different views on whether this is possible or not. Because if you want to create a safe asset, then the crucial question is whether you mutualize the risk. For example, to put it simply, if a country doesn't pay, whether another country will step in to pay instead of that country. Or you don't mutualize the risk, just somehow with financial engineering try to create an asset which is a combination of member states. And some participants argued that it is possible to do a safe asset without mutualization. Others argue that mutualization is necessary. But again, there was the view that you can do mutualization only if you have a political backing, if you have a democratic legitimacy, by basically a federal structure whereby there is a federal parliament elected by the people who will control whether this mutualized safe asset will be actually issued and used and so on. And indeed, I think everybody agreed that it's not on the cards that Europe will ever move to a federal state with a federal parliament and a federal budget.
Jolt, thank you very much for joining us. You've been listening to Backstage from Bruegel, part of the Sound of Economics podcast. If you're interested in our work and Jolt's work, please visit bruegel.org, where you can read our blog posts and listen to more of our podcasts. Thank you very much for listening.